coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to... I've got my conspiracy filters on. Hold on. There we go. Normal Chris Jordan is here. No more Super Chris Jordan there. In all sincerity, folks, welcome back to Live Chris Jordan. I am here live in the studio in Austin, Texas. We have a little bit of a switch hit this evening. We were supposed to be having Daniel Duke on to discuss a fellow Texan and great-great-grandson of the outlaw Jesse James to talk about his family's research into what is apparently the fully forged fake death of Jesse James as we know it, possibly in order to hide the treasure of the Knights of the Golden Circle, which was also tied to the treasure of the Templars, possibly. So, really interesting research. However, Daniel ended up having an emergency and was not able to make it, so we're in the midst of rescheduling him. Our pinch hitter, Mike Turber, has joined us for the evening. So, yay, Mike Turber. And we could not actually get more... an apropos pinch hitter for the evening, because we are at the 20th of September tonight, and in all of 12 days, it is the anniversary of literally the largest mass shooting in American history. That would be the Route 91 festival shooting on the grounds of Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas, Nevada, my favorite city in America. That is, of course, how we came to meet Mike Turber, a good friend of the show and good friend of myself, Shannon Caffey, that I did quite a bit of AV work with there in Las Vegas, was one of the victims. He came on the show, we talked, and then he was like, hey, I've got this investigator buddy that's been doing a lot of investigation into it. If you'd like to have him, I bet I can hook you up with him. And we ended up having Mike on. Then we ended up having Ram Dennison on, who helped him produce the documentary Money Machine. Mike has some, I don't know if he can announce the news about things working on other ends of that right now. But here in a minute, we're going to get with Mike Turber. We're going to kind of go back over the events of the Route 91 festival shooting and all of the aftermath afterward, the hashtag Vegas Strong campaign, the missing millions from the hashtag Vegas Strong campaign, the rampant cover-ups within the sheriff's department, all kinds of things, just huge missteps, and the fact that there is still nothing on record as far as motive. With the FBI, they just kind of dusted their hands and went, well, yeah, we're done. On to the next. So we'll be getting into that with Mike Turber here in just a minute. Of course, before we do that, let's hop on over and check out the Facebook stream. Facebook is our go-to. That is where we have the Curious Realm group, and that is where we post news articles, start conversations, all kinds of things. This week, out of WJBQ.com, a video of a shark flying out of the water and landing on a boat off the coast of Maine. That was truly the stuff of nightmares, if you go watch that video. It is horrifying. Out of the DailyMail.UK, the world's first flying bike that can go 62 miles an hour made its debut in the United States. That was all of a few days ago, folks. The Maine Lake full of sunken steamboats. That is out of the BBC.com. I lived in Maine for many years, still have a Maine area code to my phone. And yeah, there's a lot of mysterious stuff up there. Out of Astronomy Science, scientists have captured the first ever image of dark matter. Some amazing and haunting images with that. Also, out of interesting engineering, for the first time, extraterrestrial water has been found inside of a meteorite. And out of space.com, Space War, the mystery of the loudest sound in the universe. That is just some of the articles that we have posted this week over in the Facebook group. Of course, while you are there, make sure to stop on by and visit 5x5 News on YouTube. That is where you can find many of the videos that we will be playing this evening. It is 5, the letter X, 5, and then News. You'll see a picture of Mike Turber there under the subscribe, all that kind of stuff. While you're there, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all of our live events. That's where you can go and share your story. We have a new testimonial page where you can anonymously share your story or experience, and we will pose it to our professionals and researchers that we have here on the show. So stop on by and check that out. And of course, let's check out some of the audio and video from, you can hear there the first gunshot starting to go off, and people don't really know what it is. Suddenly the crowd reacts, and it's pretty much as Jason Aldean like leaves the stage and is like, okay, that ain't supposed to be happening. And then things go horribly awry. And Mike, welcome back to the show, my friend. How have you been?
I've been doing okay. Been doing all right here. I went through a weird like 60 days of all kinds of crazy crap happening, but last month has been pretty good, and I'll be heading back to the West Coast here pretty quick. I'm going to wrap up some stuff here and then head that way.
Well, we're showing the footage right now, which is pretty much how we came to know each other. You've been on, you and Dr. John Hall are in a dead heat of a race, and you may be ahead of him now as far as hours on combined episodes of our previous incarnation as well as Curious Realm.
I am honored. Thank you.
Well, you're always nothing but great conversation, my friend, and you're always nothing but facts. You put forward some things that are hard sometimes, but that's kind of the whole point of the show is the hard conversation. You know, even tonight, when I texted you literally at like 7 p.m. almost, like, hey, you got time to hop on a show? I've got a guest who emergency can't make it. And of course you were like, yeah.
Sure.
You're always down for the conversation, man, and you're always down for putting out facts that a lot of people aren't ready to accept.
Yeah.
And that come to be. Like, prime example would be in the Route 91 shooting, the fact that the body had been moved. You posed that extraordinarily early on. Came to be the fact. Let's start, I guess, at the beginning here and really start cracking the nut of what was the Route 91 shooting and what do we know as of right now would be the cause behind it?
That was an area of contention for all of the law enforcement that was, you know, in doing the investigation, what have you, LVMPD. But primarily the job of determining the motive was kind of pushed off to the FBI, who then subsequently pushed it off to the Behavioral Analysis Unit, the BAU, who subsequently pushed it off to some other people that they hired to come in and do a analysis of the data that was there to determine what the motive was. And I decided to do the same thing, determine what the motive was. But for me, instead of going through data and trying to pick, you know, trying to get into the mind, I try to get in the mindset of whoever's doing whatever, so I can kind of get a feel for why something was done or how something was done, or if there's some questions that weren't answered. If you get in the mindset, like you'll even pace the number of steps going from his room back to the elevator or back to the service elevator to determine, well, which one was truly faster, you know, all these different things you go through your mind. But in this case, because it was so well publicized that there was no motive, there was no note left, contrary to this, a couple of the conspiracy theories where there was, you know, some things left around, but there was no note left. No one was called, you know, no one was texted messages, even saying goodbye or anything. And there was no real indicator that this was going to happen. And as such, that kind of went along with the theme, so to speak, after the shooting of, and the police still have no motive. And it just continues on. And that makes people worried. And as well as they should be, because when you don't know the motive, it doesn't really solve the crime. It doesn't tell you why the crime was, you know, happened. And since you don't have the motive, then you can't figure out how to prevent something like this to happen in the future.
Yeah.
But that being said, I decided to contact the shooter's brother, Eric. And lo and behold, he contacted me back. He had a reporter that he was utilizing in Las Vegas at the time that for one reason or another, he lost favor to. And unfortunately, that reporter was murdered 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Yep.
I texted you like that happened right as I arrived in Vegas.
Yep.
And I was like, no way. No way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sure enough, it wasn't anybody like, it wasn't some fluke guy off the street, folks. I mean, this was a Las Vegas public official who went to this reporter's house and stabbed the man.
Exactly. And that was kind of startling, because once that happened, it wasn't known, obviously, immediately why that happened. They, you know, it was Jeff Gurman, and he was one of the main reporters, if not the main reporter, that the Review Journal had in covering the shooting. And I met him a couple of times. We didn't go out and hang out or anything like that, but I met him a couple of times and talked to him on the phone a few times. And nice guy. Everything was really cool. But for whatever reason, Eric did not want to, I mean, I know the reason, but for whatever reason, we'll just leave it at that. Eric did not want to utilize, him as a go-to person for, to talk to about different things that may be going on or what have you. And he kind of wanted a conduit to media, but not necessarily that organization.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I ended up, fulfilling that role. But, it's sad when an investigative journalist, which is obviously pretty much what I am too, I don't feel like I am, but I kind of like do, is taken out like that. And you start to look at like how many cases you've worked on that, you know, there might be some people out there that might go after you, but I've never had that fear. I've never like had that. And I mean, Jeff was, apparently exposing this person for all the transgressions that he allegedly did. I guess it got to be too much. And the person went over and it was, I guess, what was he wearing? A safety vest or what have you? And one of those hats you wear, those big wide straw hats, you know, not like a sombrero size, but one of those large straw hats, kind of looked like, you know, the Asian style hat. Murdered Jeff Gurman. And that's just, it kind of shakes you a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. Especially whenever, I mean, you yourself are somebody who has been tied up in this investigation since day one. Yep.
I've had death threats. I think almost anybody in this industry gets something from time to time, but most of the time it's just someone just rattling off and then they cool down and nothing ever happens. But there was one incident that I actually, or two incidents actually, where I actually went to the person's house, and I'm one of those people that I'm going to prevent something from happening and make certain that it doesn't happen if I know the person that's going to be doing it.
Yeah.
So anyway, That was a weird instance. I don't think I want to actually mention too much on here about what happened. One of them's on video, but, I don't know. Vegas is a city unlike any other. And for anyone to report on virtually anything going on in that city with the stigma that comes with it, you know, you have the, it came from a mafia background.
Yep.
You can argue whether or not that mafia background is still there. Just they wear suits of a different type now, maybe business suits. You know, so that has not really gone away. You know, you always hear the stories about somebody taking someone out into the desert and blah, blah, blah. And And that's pretty much the city that you would, that first comes to mind when I think that. But you know, my thoughts, everything goes out to Jeff and his family, and it's just a sad situation to have that happen, but it does kind of, you know, make you stop for a moment and think that, yeah, you might want to be a little bit more careful in the future about not necessarily what you say, because I'm going to report. I have no filter when it comes to doing that. I'm going to report what I see. But might be a little bit more cautious about how I, you know, hang around places or what have you.
Yeah, a little more present of mind as to what's going on around you, especially after things that have happened. My wife and I have definitely had that conversation, you know, even the conversation of having a lawyer, just because, I've had whistleblowers on my show.
Like, right.
I had one guy on my show at one point said that the federal government offered him money to blow up the Murrow building, you know, that's kind of a hot tater.
Yeah, that would be one.
Especially when you never find or hear from the guy again. even the guy that hooked you up with him is like, I can't find him anywhere.
That's a spicy acorn right there.
It's definitely once you get to a point of putting things out there, you have to be willing to accept the fact that, like, you might be hacked. You might be stalked by somebody at some point or have somebody following you. I know when we first started covering, even before I had you on, we had Michael Cargill on, a local gun store owner, veteran. And we were talking about the fact that he was possibly using a bump stock firearm. Not a fully automatic firearm, things like that. That ended up coming out. Then we had you on and really started breaking down the timeline of things that happened, because that's where things get wonky. That's where things really start going crazy, is the literal timeline of response of the Las Vegas Sheriff's Department.
How that information eventually got out is even a little bit more bizarre in some ways, you know, depending on which side of the fence you're on here. But, once you started looking at the timeline and watching the press conferences that happened after the fact, you could tell there's something going on here. Tucker Carlson actually stated that, when Captain Lombardo was on his show, you know, showing the video that I had acquired at the CCTV, footage, stated that, it appears as though MGM is managing the timeline. And of course, Captain says that's almost exactly, you couldn't have said it any better. And, that seemed to be the case. And the question is why? We know the shooting happened. Everyone has the audio of the shooting, so you can't argue when shots started, when they stopped, or anything like that, because it was quite clear to everyone what was going on. But the internal situation, whether or not their security could have prevented this, was the big issue. And that's when things started moving around. The timeline did the shooting start at, 10:05? Did it start at 9:59? When did it actually start? Were the shots that were shot internal down the hallway, may not have been heard outside in Jesus Campos when he was, when he noticed the door had been, had a hinge put on it or basically prevented him from coming through that door in the stairway. That's when his timeline essentially started that something was wrong. And he radioed back and he came back down the hallway. And then of course he gets shot at and gets grazed on the leg and thigh or whatever. But there was a lot of questions to that as to what time was that. And if he would have done something at that moment, could that have been prevented? That's the $64 million question that we'll never really have a good answer to. But it did, bring up some other areas of contention and that, hey, down the line, what other pieces of the timeline are there questions about? And then why would there be questions about it? And that's when, you saw the conferences and that's when Laura Loomer, who I had done some stories with, and she had some information on, different times of things happening. And Sheriff Lombardo basically points out into the press area of where he was doing the conference and pointed towards her and asked her to stop asking her question. Of course, he felt she was interrupting a different person's question. But that whole tone, the demeanor of the sheriff changed from the first time when he did his conference, which is right at the scene, and he basically calming everyone down, saying of course he used the term we had engaged the shooter, which to me means that they shot the shooter, but apparently, obviously that was not correct. But he calmed everyone down and was very, very well spoken. And then the next one, he seemed a little bit off. And then the next one seemed a little bit more off. And it almost seemed like it wasn't him talking. It was almost like he was trying to remember what he needed to say properly to convey whatever message was needed to be conveyed. And of course, standing right behind him was FBI, the local SIC, special agent in charge, Aaron Rouse. And so, and you always see him in the background staring down Sheriff Lombardo while he's doing his press conference. And you wonder, what is going on here? You just don't see this anywhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I've never seen a conference where it seemed like the guy behind him is really intent on making certain that he says the right thing. There's so many. This is not only is the largest shooting mass shooting in U.S. history, it also created a bunch of conspiracy theories because the information was not coming out. Not necessarily fast enough, but even accurate enough. And that, when you don't have answers to questions, what happens is invariably people will start answering those questions themselves for whatever reason. And that's when we had multiple shooters. We had, people shooting from helicopters. We had, a guy with, you had Mike Adams, nutritious army dude, whatever his name is. Making claims that I have the location of the second shooter and he pulls out what appears to be, a decent math scenario, which calculates the distance to the shooter and where he is and stuff like this. But it was all wrong. And it basically that put fear in people because the issue I had with those, and I don't mean to like take over the show because I'm almost rambling now, but
no,
the issue I had was, that someone, if they know the shooter is gone, he, by whatever means, whether they shot him or whether he shot himself, either way, that there's a certain comfort level there saying, okay, well, they got him and there's no one else. But when you start introducing new theories, multiple shooters, and of course, a lot of people had legitimate questions. I think you probably did too at that time because a lot of people just didn't know, but they also weren't into the evidence like some of the others were. But at the same time, a lot of people didn't know what the answer was. And so the fear of these people out there that were, capitalizing on the multiple shooters theories, they basically were scaring people in Vegas because they thought, wow, there's, there's people still out here wanting to kill us for whatever reason. And that put a lot of people in fear. I literally had someone call me. They were in a parking lot of a grocery store, and helicopters were flying overhead, and they were in full panic. And they asked me directly, because you actually know them too. Mm-hmm. They asked me directly, did they shoot from helicopters? Just let me know. If, you know, don't lie to me and please tell me the truth. And I told them, you know, the truth and what have you, to calm them down a little bit, because helicopters had not flown that direction before where they were living.
Yeah.
And it was different. So, and I get it. So, but
yeah.
Yeah, Las Vegas changed my life and obviously a lot of others. And, you know, go ahead.
It hit national headlines for a few weeks. It was mm-hmm. there for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And it, as a matter of fact, it came right on the heels of the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And kind of took over the news cycle for a little while and then rapidly got scurried away. Every once in a while, you'd hear a timeline update or something like that. And it was one of those like, yeah, what the heck? Why is the timeline continually shifting and changing?
Yeah. How hard can it be in a city that has thousands of cameras and all of these different things? Yeah. And they have people filming a concert. How hard can that timeline be? And apparently it was an issue for several.
Yeah. Well, and then from there, sprung up the Vegas Strong campaign,
mm-hmm.
which was, of course, akin to the Boston Strong, after the Boston Marathon bombing, all that yep. kind of stuff. And it was a little bit of a rallying point for a little while.
It was.
Caused a stir locally, made some income, and then randomly vanished.
Yeah. And that's when you had, you know, Sisolak and Sheriff Lombardo basically pieced, you know, that together along with others. And the funds that went, I think it was around $12 million or something along those lines. And the funds were eventually dispersed. And I have the amounts that, you know, a lot of people received, but, and I don't want to get into that because I don't want anybody to know the dollar amount, but the people eventually did receive the funds, but not in a time frame that they actually needed it. They made it sound like that was going to be an emergency fund, something set up to help people. Like if they're about to be evicted, you know, or if, you know, their car, any situation that, you know, cause them to be in a financial predicament was supposed to be helped by this fund. And I'll never forget listening to one of the women that's on, the documentary Money Machine, where she's talking about, you know, she needed her rent then and she lost, you know, her child, and, you know, was,
yeah,
you know, possibly, you know, I don't want to get into the personal things of it, but it was a devastating time for this person, and they were losing things. There were, you know, one, they had PTSD, so it was very difficult for them to get back to normal. This is not something you snap out of, you know, it's a devastating thing that people go through, and people react to it differently. And some people shut down a little bit, and it's very difficult to get back to things as normal. And that was an issue as to why aren't these funds being dispersed in a timely fashion, where are the funds? And then the funds got mingled in with another fund and it got convoluted. And of course, questions went out. Did he use this for his campaign? You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of questions about that, but yeah.
Well, even the Las Vegas Review Journal, I finally found the article, put out Vegas Strong Fund pays 12 Las Vegas shooting victims, then stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see right here, one of the 12 people who received settlement checks of $14,800. Yep. Checks ranging in amounts from 200 to 3,900 is what was put out, but 12 people out of $22 million.
Yep.
Out of $22 million collected, 12 people got checks out of that fund.
Which means they basically should have gotten close to almost $2 million a piece. But when you see the check amount for $14,000, where did the rest of the money go? Where is that accounting at? And eventually it came around because after that article, the more funds were dispersed. But the problem is look at the timeline. Look at the date of that article.
Yeah.
So if you calculate how long before someone starts knocking on your door wanting to rent, or, you know, your car payment, or maybe some of these were financially in an issue beforehand, and this just exacerbated it. But, you know, the bigger picture here is obviously many lost their lives.
Yeah.
Husbands lost their wives lost husbands, people lost children and so forth. And the whole, you know, in the whole scheme of things, there were 60 lives, 58 were lost that night, to additional, and some people may argue about whether or not that should be included in the total or not, but I'm going to include it in the total because I think it stems from those injuries, whether they're physical or not physical injuries, doesn't matter. And they're gone, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all can be traced back to how a person was treated. The motive.
Yeah.
That's what everyone wanted to know. What was the reason? And for some, the reason doesn't add up. The BAU hired 25 different professional people and different categories. They had therapists, psychologists, and stuff like this to look at the evidence and determine what they thought the reasons were. And they came out with a report. Now, if you remember, if you look at the reports that have come out over, like, say, Sandy Hook, Parker, say, Aurora, or Holt, and so forth, those reports are detailed, they're lengthy, and the FBI gets into a lot of different details. They go deep on it. This one, this report from the FBI was 2.5 pages, whereas some of these other ones were like 1,800 pages, 1,600 pages. But at the same time, not in defense of the FBI, they were not the lead as far as the actual investigative arm. It was actually the LVMPD. So LVMPD came out with the FIT report, which covers a lot of the bases, but had a lot of errors in it. But the FBI came out, was supposed to come out with the motive, and they came out with like this ad hoc top 10 list. It was almost like watching a late night show and the top 10 reasons why Stephen Panik went out and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And for me, it just rubbed me wrong. I know it rubbed everyone I know. It was wrong. Yeah. You got it on screen. And so when you go down the list, it's some obvious things, and it's some things that me and Eric agree with that was the motivation. And some of the things that just don't really, you know, they don't factor in. But the main reasons were when he was going to Lake Tahoe, he was basically a much bigger fish, so to speak, in a smaller pond. That's the way Eric put it. And so he got treated very well. And he gambled lots of money. And that got him the comps. Of being able to stay there and have you know, friends and family and all this other stuff, and that's
points and everything else.
Exactly.
And cards.
Yep. And you know how that works. I mean, that's just part of the deal. You go there, and if you gamble $10,000, it's not, you don't have to lose $10,000 or $100,000 or whatever the mark is for that particular package that they're going to give you. But as long as they see you moving money through their cash system, so to speak. Then you're gonna get some rewards for that. For me and you, it's probably a buffet meal, maybe on a great time. The hotel that's in the back that's a little cheaper, they might give you room there.
Yeah.
But for Stephen Paddock, he was getting the Royals treatment. He was getting the best rooms and all this other stuff. when he moves, when he starts going to Vegas, he starts winning probably more money. And he played mostly video poker was his primary, or like almost 100% of what he did. And he knew the machines that would pay him the best. He would sit down, look at the numbers, and he would know that if he played X amount of money, the odds are that he should hit a certain amount. And he may come out ahead, he may come out even, but either way, he was still ahead in his mind because of all the comps. And he lived like a king. And his queen did as well, because the queen happened to be the host that he had when he was in Lake Tahoe. And that was Mary Lou Danlin. So when he would go to Vegas, he would expect these things. And when they started looking at him and saying, you know, Mr. Beck, sorry, you know, we know you're in this tournament, blah, 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 you know, like, and we're not going to give you the 3x points, or, you know, they started taking things away from him. And then
because the tier in Tahoe is different than the tier in Vegas, and
exactly. Yeah. And so as you look at this, of course, anyone listening to this would be, well, that's not a good enough reason to shoot all those people. And you're correct. There is no reason to shoot all these people. But in the mind of a person who's, I guess you would consider him, narcissistic, a person who's used to having things a certain way, and then people changed the deal line, that rubbed him wrong. And then he had other chances. His favorite thing to do was to fly his plane. He was taking blood pressure medication, and the blood pressure medication made him sick. And so he stopped taking that. That caused him to lose his license to fly.
Yep.
And because if you can't pass the physical, if you're not taking your blood pressure medication, not going to pass you to fly on a plane. So he couldn't fly. It wasn't even a trade-off for him. If you're going to throw up continuous by taking the medication, well, you don't get in a plane, and flying is not fun anymore. And there's other circumstances that go along with high blood pressure and things like that as well when it comes to, say, the bedroom.
Yeah.
And so when you start losing all of these different plans that were once pleasurable or once satisfactory or something, start looking for reasons to possibly do other things, your exit strategy. And in the mind of a person such as Paddock, what goes through the mind is that I'm mad. I'm going to take myself out. But I have to get back at the people that I feel, you know, ruined the years of my life that I should have been enjoying life and so forth.
Yeah.
And in whatever wild way that he was thinking, that entity ended up being the gaming industry. And the way he decided to do that was to shoot innocent people, which would cause people not to come to Vegas. They would lose lots of money, and that's what went through his mind as best we can come up with. Some of the minor stuff.
And you could not have gotten, I'm very sorry to say, Mr. Paddock, you could not have gotten the more visceral opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. It did not shut down Vegas.
No.
It barely skipped a beat. I knew guys that were on property, like running a show, barely skipped a beat. And you know, for all of you out there who may not know all the details and are like, my God, how many trips did this guy make back and forth? Number one, he was not going through a public elevator. He wasn't going through the front where, you know, he was going to a private floor, 32nd floor. He was going through a special elevator to be able to get there. So he made as many trips up and down with suitcases full of whatever that he wanted without question.
And that's actually where I came onto the scene, because while I was there, one of the things I did, the people were trying to get on the service elevator to go up there to just video it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, some weren't successful. So I decided, well, let me give it a try. So I with camera in hand. I didn't really even know where it was. I had an idea where it was. And I walked through the employee entrance right off. You go in valet, you go through the employee entrance. And I just literally walked to the back, past the guy on the left, and I walked onto the, there's a bay of six elevators back there, service elevators, and I got on the elevator, punch 32, went straight up to the floor, got out, looked around, kind of, I didn't know exactly what to do, but I saw a door, so I opened the door, and there I was on the 32nd floor.
Yeah.
And I did that like 60 times. But I did it 27 times and finally took Laura Loomer with me. And then we put that on the local Fox News. But in doing that, not once was I ever approached by anyone ever and asked, hey, what are you doing? We even brought up some of my Pelican cases, which were classic cases that people would bring weapons up in. And nothing. Not a word. So the reason why that's important at the time I did it was, in January, after the shooting. And on November 17th, Mandalay Bay, or MGM, put out a notice that since everyone was talking about the service elevators and how we got the weapons to the room, that they would have guards at each of the elevators. I never saw a guard. There was never a guard at the elevator, the service elevators. They put the guards at the actual guest elevators, which is not where he went to bring the weapons to the room. He used the service elevator. There was a lot of cases that he brought there. 24 weapons were brought to the room. So you're looking at, only one was a pistol. So all the rest were rifles. So they're, relatively large, weapons plus thousands of rounds of ammunition, which was very heavy. And he would tip. Yeah, he tip the bellman, $100, and they actually help him take the stuff to the room. And this is after they had a situation in 2013, I think, I'm pretty sure it was 2013. A man, I can't remember his name, I think his last name starts with Donner or something like that. Another person had, gotten weapons into the room, and a housekeeper walked in the room and noticed that there was a rifle there, and then, that person got caught. So it wasn't like MGM or Mandalay Bay, did not know that it's possible that people would be bringing weapons up to the room, and they supposedly put security measures in place, that would handle that, but obviously, it didn't work on Paddock.
Oh, I used to work an event right up against SHOT Show every year, which is like one of the largest security and gun manufacturing shows out there. Like it's where police departments go to talk to Glock to have 200 pistols made for their SWAT teams, things like that.
I used to do that show.
Latest and greatest in anti-terrorism non-lethals, things like that. And those guys are just like strolling up the elevator, like you said. And granted, I roll into an elevator with my Pelican all the time.
Yep.
And
I did the same thing. Some of the more expensive items that I would have at the show, I would bring them back to the room.
Absolutely.
Anything
that's quote walkable.
Yeah, exactly. Bring that back to the room and just sit there. I wouldn't even think twice. I didn't think nothing of it.
Yeah.
Not even a thought.
Well,
but
even the protocols of Mandalay Bay, when it came to their 32nd floor and how security was handled, because, the security guard was shot at long before that happened, long before the shots went out the window. There was one that went through the door.
That's right.
And never reported. Police weren't responding to that. Nothing like that.
He reported it.
Yeah.
To the security at the hotel.
Yeah.
And apparently to leave the radio open, he actually picked up a cell phone. Now I want the cell phone record. That's the thing that should have been in the fit report that would clearly identify the time, not some handwritten note that a security officer puts down that You know, Jesus Campo fell down at 9:59 or 10.
Here's the radio log.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, even the fact that they have a private back channel to the sheriff's department.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
It's mind-numbing, some of the circular ways that they had around the typical system of reporting.
Right. And some of the bigger things that, that came out that were their first questions to almost anyone's mind, where are the officers? Where is SWAT? Why did it take the SWAT team and was it an hour and 17 minutes, I believe it was, to get into the room from the moment that the last shot was fired?
Yep.
And I'm the one, and I'm the one that found the last shot, the suicide shot. It took, you know, a needle in a haystack to find that thing, but that was important. The attorneys needed that, and I, first got it. So 10:16 and 16 seconds is basically the last shot. And then you go all the way to, you know, 11, whatever the time was, when they breached the room, you know, that time frame is a long time.
Yeah.
And there were officers were on the floor during the shooting. So with officers on the floor, the same floor he's on during the shooting, or the floor below, in the case of a couple officers, what was going on? The when you have an active shooter, what's supposed to happen, or what most of the most training scenarios play out, is that if you have an active shooter, you go to the shooter and you take him out, no matter what. There is no other protocol. There's no second guessing. There's no thinking of, you know, who cares who's in the room with him. Who cares if he has a hostage at that moment?
Yeah.
This guy is shooting indiscriminately into a crowd below him from an elevated position, which is like the most perfect scenario that you could play out for a shooter, is to be in an elevated position with a whole bunch of people and just shooting randomly, which a lot of people thought he was, you know, expert marksman or something like that. But no, he was literally just spraying, the bullets down. And hit a rather large percentage of people, which is, I agree, is rather bizarre, but that's what happened. And during the shooting, those officers could have advanced. But
oh, absolutely.
Except for one major officer who happened to be one of the training officers who had a trainee with him, Officer Hendrick, who froze on the floor just below in the 31st floor. And you see this on the body worn camera of the trainee, I believe is who had the body worn camera.
Yeah.
And you can see him panicking on that floor. I don't have a direct issue with someone freezing. I don't have a direct issue with essentially all of the emotions that probably went through this person's mind to cause him to do that. That doesn't mean all the rest of the officers are going to have the same way. It's just like if you go to war again, that's what the term shell shock comes from, where they hear all the sounds and what's going on and the possible impending doom of their life. You know, the whole scenario plays out in front of them, and then they just freeze, and then you know they're shot. But this officer is a training officer, and it caused all of the people that were around him, like he was the lead, to basically stop as well. But, you know, it can be argued whether or not that would have made a huge difference. Catherine and I looked at that volley of shots, and basically in our mind we said, you know, if they would have just distracted him, threw a garbage can down the hallway, put a couple of shots through the door, anything to distract him. And even though if there was a hostage on the other side, you know, you got to, maybe a hostage in there, but you've got hundreds of people that are being shot at.
Yeah.
So someone has to make that call. But that was not done. That wasn't the case. And then of course there was SWAT was nowhere to be found. The SWAT team that eventually made the breach into the room was an ad hoc, team put together. A couple of people weren't even actual SWAT.
Yeah.
But Las Vegas had just, the month prior, or a couple months prior, had announced that their SWAT team was one of the best trained in the country, and was on the ready 24/7. And you and I have been around Vegas quite a bit. You know where that South Station is, and how long you and I could walk to Mandalay Bay from that station, well within the time frame of the shooting.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't done. But anyway, so much happened.
it was once again the largest mass shooting in American history that was swept under the rug so entirely fast. Like literally by the time December rolls around, you hear that's nothing. Right.
Yep. They have to get business back to normal. And that's, they have to keep those machines going. That money has to keep coming in. Those resort fees that you and I have to pay for some unknown reason have to come through to funnel. When you ever search it, and if anyone doesn't know this, if you haven't been to Vegas, the rooms, you'll see them listed for $28 to stay at the Luxor. And you're thinking, wow, that's a great price. And it is, but then you have $40 fee that they throw on top of it, and then when you ask them what it's for, it's for pool and for towels and for weight room and for having the amenities and stuff like that. So, well, I don't want any of the amenities. Oh, you still have to pay it, you're not going to get away with it. But that money goes into a fund that they use to promote Las Vegas, and I in theory it works, obviously, but it's a very large amount of money, and it hoodwinks a lot of people too. They go there thinking that they're going to get a $28 room, and they're not. But anyway, it doesn't happen that way.
Well, I want to thank you for all the work that you have done on this front, all the work that you continue to do on this front. Once again, you're getting ready to go back to Vegas right now for the fifth anniversary. What is in the plans? What is in the works? What new information might you have, Mike?
Well, as far as it depends on what was the last information someone heard, but for some it might be different. All of the payments for the settlement have been paid out. There is a single individual who was the only individual to withdraw from the lawsuit. That was Roger Keenis, a former Marine and a person who lives in the thought of honor, integrity, and patriotism and so forth, that he was not going to add onto that the lawsuit, knowing that there were so many problems with it. Obviously, Jennifer Togliatti being the daughter of George Togliatti, who happened to be the vice president of MGM, and she's the judge that actually mediated the case.
That's a
problem. There's stuff like that. Roger's case has been moving forward because he has his own case against them, and maybe we can reserve that for another show, because I know you're going to wrap things up here. It's a very interesting story that you would, and maybe as we get closer to the first and go over some stuff. The only other thing I want to bring up that's important in any event like this, I ain't even using the word event. It's just it's a word that's pretty much okay.
Yeah.
But anytime a situation like this happens, you always have a memorial that's set up at that location.
Yeah.
To honor those, that left us. And I've never been to one that was further away from the event than this one. It is, I think I measured out 7.5 miles away, nowhere near anything. So when you're talking about like out of sight, out of mind earlier.
Yeah.
There is no, no worse slap in the face that I can think of. I mean, granted the memory gardens are a beautiful thing. I get it. It's all nice and everything, but I just don't understand why you would put something so far away from the event of where it occurred. I mean,
Not even a plaque on a light pole.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Yeah. The closest thing to a memorial down there is the one for Melissa Ramirez.
Yeah.
That's the only one. And that's done by friends and family, and that's it. It's a strange town. It's a wonderful town. I love Las Vegas.
My favorite town in the country, man. Like I love traveling to Vegas. Just spent 8 days there. Like I love it there.
Always entertaining.
To know that things like that happened, to know that most of that money just poof. To know that once again the memorial for everything is nowhere near the site or location.
Right.
It is once again the largest and most forgotten mass shooting in American history. And whenever you look at things, like, they give a lot of caveats to it being the largest lone gunman mass shooting. No, I guarantee you that is the largest mass shooting, Jack. Yep. Since we have been classifying mass shootings.
That's it. And the other odd thing is this whole thing is not like any other shooting ever. Even though it's the largest, I get that part would make it in its own category. But at the same time, there are so many things that are about this that no other shooting is even remotely close.
Yeah, we got a bump stock ban out of it.
Yeah.
We got zero answers.
Yeah.
Zero investigation. Everything done in a slipshod, shut it up manner.
And MGM sues the victim. And the bump stock guy sues the victims. The bump stock guy sues the victims and MGM sues them.
Yeah.
When you hear something like this, it just boggles the mind.
Yeah, and it's pure aneurysm material. It really is.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. So we could do like 12 shows on this thing.
Yeah, we have. And I'll do 12 more because it needs to be addressed. We need to recognize it. We need to be willing to ask the questions.
Right.
And hold people accountable.
Yeah, exactly. And between now and the first letter, if you want to do some other shows and maybe concentrate on because this is so huge, there's some areas that we can get into some details on so that people understand. Because, I mean, it's important. And you have to learn from these events as you move forward. And that's why when Ramsey and I put together, well, Ramsey, 90%, or however many percent higher than me.
Oh, yeah.
We put the movie, the documentary together, Money Machine. In the beginning, it was going to be the documentary about what happened, blah, blah, blah. But as we started digging into this, we started seeing, wow, everyone understands what happened when the people were shot and injured and so forth. And we told some of those stories, but we felt an important story that should not be, left behind is the story of how they handled it, how they basically handled everything after that. It was an election, and Lombardo scheduled, he had to put out all that evidence, he was court ordered to release body camera footage, all this other stuff. And what did he do? He held the bad stuff until after his election.
Yep.
And then he put out the video that shows Hendrix freezing in the hallway, and then he put out the video that shows the negative.
He withheld documents.
He actively
sued by the media.
For
withholding documents that he was subpoenaed to release as a matter of public record.
Yep.
So
and he's the sheriff.
Yeah,
he's the head law officer. He's supposed to uphold the law. He's not supposed to be breaking the law.
Yeah. Like if it was like, the standard like police chief or someone like that that's like appointed into office, that'd be one thing. But this guy was fully elected into office and is technically sworn by oath to protect the Constitution.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes it even worse, is that fact. And
he basically made a mockery of of everything, and for his own benefit and for the benefit of Sisolak, and for the benefit of George Togliatti. I mean, as soon as Sisolak was putting his face in those cameras as much as possible, he was just a commissioner. That's all he was. He was a commissioner. But the reason why he basically won the governorship is because he started to become the face of the shooting, essentially, because every time there was a conference or there was a camera turned on, his face was there. And so people got used to that, whatever. And he seemed genuinely, you know, working to help the situation. So I get part of that. But when you see someone, when the camera turns off and they see the camera turned off and they immediately bolt from the location because, well, if the camera's not on, I'm not going to be here. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Pretty sad. And don't forget the 58 and the 60. It changed everything for me. And
same.
And the situation I was in with the Melissa Ramirez video, it caused, you know, a lot of issues for myself and for others as well. But
absolutely. You ain't going to a Wynn property anytime soon. Once again, Mike, I want to thank you always for coming on, for the candid conversations that we always have. And being the pinch hitter that you are, but always there, always giving me information in the background.
Absolutely.
I truly love our off-air conversations, my friend. Let everybody know where they can go to follow you, to keep up with all the work of 5x5 News and the latest on Vegas.
Probably the easiest way to find me and or what I do. It's been lax lately because of the Afghanistan situation, but is to go to YouTube and search for 5x5 News, which is 5x5 News, just like 4x4, but 5x5. So search for 5x5 News. You'll see our channels right there, and scroll down to some of the Vegas videos where I actually, myself and another person by the name of Mr. Visual, explain what happened and show you in very good detail the explanations of why people thought there were multiple shooters and so forth. And so it explains a lot. It's very, very well done videos that allow you to understand why the situation occurred, where there's so many conspiracy theories and whatnot. But that's the main place. And I'll be doing some videos between now and the first. And then we're going to shift gears after the first, because after the first, my 5-year mission is over, and I am going to be shifting into a different phase of life, but it will still be doing what I do, except at a new level.
I am so excited for you about that.
Yep, it's going to be interesting.
Awesome.
So we'll see what happens then, and of course you'll be the one that always seems to get the inside scoop, because I like you and I like doing the shows, and I always have a great time with you and talking to you. It's always a good time, man. I appreciate you being in my life.
I greatly appreciate your time this evening, and always take care of yourself. Be safe out there, bud.
Thank you, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right. While you are online checking out all the work of Mike Turber, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find the video channels of all of our guests, like Mike Turber. It's where you can find Knowledge Vault with declassified programs, documents, scientific studies, and more. It's where there is also the Share Your Story page. You can stop on by. Share your experience with us. If you're a targeted individual, an abductee, had a near-death experience or cryptid sighting, you can keep your experience anonymous. You can share audio or video or pictures with us that we will use on an episode with our guests, talking about these topics. So right after this commercial break, folks, we will come back with a pre-recorded segment, as always. Our guest tonight in our pre-recorded segment is a conversation from yesterday with our good friend, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. We talk about the divine, the source of the divine, what we as individuals believe to be the divine, and what it is to touch the divine, to reach out and participate in it. So we will be getting into that and so much more with our good friend, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, right after these messages, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is podcastcadet.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back from this commercial break. Thank you so much to our amazing sponsors, as always, True Hemp Science. Make sure to stop on by. Use the code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire cart, as well as get two free CBD edibles. I just gave a bottle of True Hemp Science to a friend of mine on the road this last week, and he is loving it. So stop on by, check them out, folks. Also, our good friend and sponsor, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge over at The Secret of Everything. She is your number one source for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion exercises. Also, while you're there, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That's where you can find everything. That's where you can follow us on social media. That's also where you can visit the new Share Your Story page. If you're an experiencer and you have an experience, feel free to stop on by, share it with us. It is an anonymous system if you so choose, or you can leave your name. We will take your case up with professionals that we talk about, researchers, authors, things like that. Our guest in this segment today is our good friend, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. We will be talking with him about the world of the divine and touching the divine and coming in contact with the divine. I recently had an incredible experience. I've been going out and sponsoring a lot of events lately. Bigfoot events. I went out and sponsored the MUFON conference in Denver. That was awesome. Had a chance to sponsor the International Association of Remote Viewers conference, but last month, I had the really incredible experience of sponsoring the International Association for Near-Death Studies conference in Salt Lake City. That was the footage that we aired last week. 5 hours of incredible interviews. And after 4 days talking with individuals who have researched the world of near-death studies, who have literally experienced and touched the other side. And as you, Reverend Carter, know, and as our regular listeners know, I myself have had my own, quote, divine experience. It is beyond anything else that I can describe, which is why I call it divine. But that is the call that led me into the seminary, and led me down this esoteric path of life, of searching for something. I knew at that point that there was, I don't know if you call it God, the universe, or what, but there was definitely something greater than I at work. And that was really a stealing moment for me in life, where like I realized that it wasn't just me. And these experiences exist throughout humanity. They have been things that have spawned everything from religious to philosophic thought to even what we consider to be many paranormal experiences. So welcome back to the show, Reverend Carter. How are you doing?
Okay, brother. And welcome back home from your travels and this knowledge and expanding the wisdom circle and bringing it back to us. So it's good to see you, brother.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. It is, like I said earlier, it has really been an honor to go out and be a part of these events in that capacity and really get to sit back and talk with researchers, talk with people like yourself, authors. And when it came to near-death experience, the experiences that I discussed with people were so entirely visceral. Even a couple of the people that were light workers and healers afterward, I noticed a great number of people who came back with distinct gifts, much like the UFO experiencers.
Yes. Yes.
And yes, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. Go ahead.
No, I was thinking of, I don't know if Raymond Moody wrote this book, but there was a book written. It may have been it was a gentleman. It may have been Raymond Moody, but I could be wrong. Who was comparing the NDE, the OBE to contact experiences? And because it's of the transformational power. of what had happened to individuals. It reminds me of Eckhart Tolle's quote. I don't know if he originated it, but the opposite of life is not death. The opposite of death is birth, because life has no opposite. And what these experiences remind us of is that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's just transformed. And so we have, you know, consciousness is going on, even when people are so-called clinical death, because what you're talking about is people who've had the near-death experience. And there are also people who were declared dead and come back. You know, it's not just Jesus.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. It gets the conversation going.
Man, we interviewed a gentleman, and I've got his book. It's here somewhere. I'll find it in just a second. But, man, Tolman, we had a gentleman on during our coverage, Vincent Tolman, who actively spent an hour in a body bag.
Wow.
That's mind-numbing to begin with. And then to even come back with faculty. Like, yeah. five minutes of oxygen deprivation will destroy the brain.
Yes.
And I mean to tell you, Michael,
Maybe not.
And this was one of those moments where the EMT in the back of the van with him was the one who had the experience, was the one who heard a voice say, he's not dead yet. And it shocked him back to life. Like the other EMTs were like, what are you doing? You're new. You're literally going to ruin your job. Like, you are going to get us all fired by shocking this dead man. Yeah. Like, this is abuse of a corpse. We will be arrested for it. Ended up getting one pulse of a heartbeat, and that was enough for them to literally spring into action and bring him to a totally different part of the hospital into an alert team.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed that more of these stories are not made public. But like so many things that don't fit in the box, I understand why. But again, because of the reaction I just said, wait a minute, it's not just Jesus. And, you know, that's anathema to even go there. I was mentioning to you, I've heard and read about people having them, but I met two people as a chaplain who've had the experience. I'm pretty sure they didn't know each other. There were years in between that it happened, and they told the story of being conscious after being declared dead, watching people trying to say, hey, I'm over here, reaching out to touch the physician, and the hand goes right through. And you know, just this whole thing where I'm still alive, but my body there, the shell, is being declared dead. And then going through the tunnel, seeing loved ones, seeing pets. And it's interesting because from Moody studies and people like him, it's interesting because whatever your belief system is, that's the individual people said they see for the most part at the end of the tunnel. If you're Muslim and you have the NDE, it's Muhammad or what you figure they would look like. If it's Christian, it's Jesus. If you're Buddhist, you see what I'm saying? And there's all kinds of studies that we can talk about that. But the point is, and you know, if you're an atheist, there's just a being of light. And this feeling of love and acceptance, and you're not ready yet. It's not time yet. People saying, you know what? I just felt so like home. I don't want to come back. But they're saying, you've got to get back. You've got your mission to fulfill. And then they come back with gifts, maybe more intuitive stuff, maybe hands-on, whatever it is. And when people come back from the experiencer experience, and it's kind of like an ego death. You know, you come back, you have a larger insight. Some people come back and say, I don't fear death anymore because I know it's just a continuation. Maybe I don't want it to hurt or I don't want it, but as far as the actual act of it, it's okay by me. Yeah. I've done it before. And so these stories are fascinating and they touch on everything we talk about, energy, life after life, religious topics. The divine, whatever that means, and it means something different to everybody. So these are fantastic stories that give people hope that the physics of our time cannot begin to grasp. And it's the questions are sometimes more important than the answers, but it's wonderful.
Well, and, one of the people that I actively interviewed, Richard, was a former murder investigator. Like, he was a lead murder, homicide detective, and was not brought up in a religious way. Like you said, most people tend to have an experience that is akin to the spiritual upbringing that they have.
Yes.
Whether it be Muhammad, Allah, what have you. He had none of that and yet still figured out that his experience was proof of something else.
Yes.
Once again, Vincent Tolman, when he came back, he was not a person of extreme faith, nothing like that. When he came back, he knew definitely that there was something different. There was something else. And began work as a light healer. And I've been through a lot of healing sessions, Reverend. I've been to a lot of mediums, all kinds of things. I am always willing to enjoy the experience whenever given the opportunity. I've even aired my own past life regression, hypnotic therapy here on the show, you know? So when he said that he wanted to do some meridian healing on me, and it was interesting because he started doing this technique where he was basically talking to my ego or my intellectual part of me or my spiritual part of me and would address them as such. And it was like my body was moving like a pendulum in response of yes and no. And there were moments where I tried fighting. I was not in a hypnotic state. Nothing like that. I physically tried fighting my body for, like, I could feel it pulling forward for yes. And I tried fighting and it was like, nah. It kept going. It was really interesting. And to the point of a full physical, visceral, emotional release. Grown man crying like a baby in public.
Yeah.
And even hearing my grandfather play accordion.
Yeah.
While it was going on, while he was addressing the fact that my grandfather was there and wanting to talk to me. It was pretty incredible. And to know that this was a talent and a skill that he did not have prior to experience. Yeah. Yes. It was nothing that he was a practitioner of, nothing he was a researcher of. These things found him afterward. And it's so interesting. Even whenever you start going through the Bible and start looking at the stories of prophets, healers, things like that, it was very much the same way until the moment of their epiphany. None of this gift was bestowed upon them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When I'm looking at it just from an ET perspective, whether it's Samson or whether it was Jesus or John the Baptist, they're told they're going to be visited. The angel says we're going to do whatever we're going to do. And they always come back with this gift. Samson has the superhuman strength. John the Baptist has, for lack of a better word, the gift of gab. He's charismatic. His words carry weight. And he has the power to persuade. And, of course, Jesus has everything that he has. And so there's this transformation, which again, I'm referring to as a kind of like an ego death, where you just surrender to the will of you want to call it God or the cosmos or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And so these people have no separation between them and their source. And they become a channel for this energy. And the many ways it manifests. It could be psychic. It could be, it could be healing, hands-on healing. Obviously, it could be visionary. It could be anything. Because we all have different gifts. And as Paul talks about. So... And I think people need to know that this didn't stop 2,500 years ago.
Mm.
You know, there are people I have met who have said, well, you can't do healing. Only Jesus did that. Like every all truth and revelation has stopped. And that's simply not true.
Yeah.
But it does account for a lot of ways why people don't get involved or it's got to be from the devil. I don't know where it's from, so I'm automatically suspicious of it. I'm not talking about me, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so that, you know, that has to be respected, but it reminds me of the Shakespearean quote, you know, there's more things in heaven and earth that are dreamt of in your philosophy, Horatio.
Yeah.
I'm reading, you know, some scientific stuff, which is hard for me to wrap my mind around, about physics. And, you know, it's, well, I'm reading a book called, Religion and Extraterrestrials, How Will the World Religions? It's by a guy named David Weintraub.
Okay.
It's well written, yeah. Very scholarly. It's very, you know, small print. He's still in this Newtonian Cartesian way that if we don't find these certain things in the atmosphere, then we will know in the next 10 years whether there's life on other planets. And we already know there is. Yes. But he's using this old model to come to a conclusion that if this model doesn't serve. And so we already know that these people are using 60th century, maybe hundredth, 2000th century physics. And because our 21st century physics is not picking up what we think are the tools for life, then that shows that we are the only people out there. And it's just like, hey, man, what's it going to take?
Yeah, absolutely. I just popped up the article. I mean, it's been all over the place over the last week, but newly discovered planet is half water, half rock, straight out of science fiction. Quite literally what scientists have said for decades. Till we find a planet that's water, we ain't going to find life, not as we know it. We might find silica-based, we might find something else, but life as we know it does not exist without water. So we're looking for a planet with water, gotta be at least half water. Like, bam, there it is. Like, it exists, it's out there. That is literally within the last week, September 13th, that article came out.
And I think that that's a way of preparing us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that is what we have held on this show throughout this. And don't get me wrong, folks, the discussion going on amongst Congress right now, mainly because they're upset that these things went on without their knowledge. Hey, we're really supposed to be oversighting this and giving you money to do it. So how come we didn't know about you to begin with?
Yes.
So there's that argument. But it's all too puzzle like. Things fit way too conveniently. And it seems as though it is a planned dissemination of information.
Yeah.
So that the knowledge that is already attained can be released. The only way that they can monetize this technology, like the microwave, lasers, things like that, is to get it out in the public eye and to say that the technology exists. And if this is the way to do it, and if this is the way to open the conversation, so be it. But yeah. It's got to be opened in order for the technology to come out to public use. They said for years and years that hypersonic was not possible. Like, we're literally fighting them on the battlefield now. Like, they are actively using hypersonic weaponry. So there is no more denying the possibility of the technology existing or working.
Yeah. Yes.
It's there. So, yeah, the fact that these discoveries are happening on such a rapid pace right now, I, like you, truly believe the fact that they're just being allowed to say it out loud now.
Yeah, and again,
the discovery won't be held in the dark now, of planet half water, half rock. You know, that may have been held back for a while in previous years. Now it won't be.
Right. The thing is, though, is where does it lead? Because, again, like I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. I think it's on Amazon Prime. Mm. It's been out for about 2 or 3 years. The 11th Grade.
Ah, yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, all the machinations that went into Eisenhower and the treaties and how to disseminate the technologies and obviously they've erred on the side of keeping much of it top secret.
Yeah.
And you can not live to see your kids grow old if you decide to buck that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's still drips and drabs. You know, give them a little, throw them a bone here, throw them a bone there. And I think the argument that we're not ready yet collectively, of course, there are going to be some people who are going to throw themselves off of buildings and flip out. That's always going to be, you know, but I think most of humanity either believes they're being lied to anyway,
yeah,
and or believes that we are not alone. And it's still these religions, these religious leaders, these leaders of multinational corporations with coal and oil and that kind of thing. It's still those, and of course, American Medical Association, those kinds of people. They're keeping it under wraps because the profits stop coming in. The profits stop coming in.
Yeah.
You know, these people are getting here through other dimensions and portals. That means, and they're not using coal or gas. Well, there goes Exxon. They probably have cures for the diseases that we know about. So there goes the money that's being made, you know, off of cancer research and research like that. That's not going to make these corporations happy.
Yeah.
And so instead of benefiting the planet, it's still, this knowledge is still held in the hands of the few.
Yeah. And I mean, just to bring that back to the world of spirituality and the other side, things like that. I just popped up the Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies. Robert Bigelow, of course, was Bigelow Aerospace. He has been involved with research like that for years and years. He, former owner of Skinwalker Ranch, researching into those anomalies, and Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies, along with us, was one of the main sponsors of the International Association for Near-Death Studies Conference.
Yeah.
And right here is their big challenge, 2023. Like, they are actively giving out grant programs for survival of human consciousness beyond permanent bodily death, and focus specifically on confirmed contact and communication with the other side. To know, and I had the opportunity and I had to do it. I went up and shook Robert Bigelow's hand afterward and was like, it is because of people like you and Bix, that things like this are being funded and found. It's remarkable. Like, when I went to the Remote Viewing Association conference, I'd followed the world of remote viewing for years and years, Michael, but never had it dawned on me that all the people involved with the infrastructure and the beginning science of remote viewing every one of them was a PhD holder in particle physics, exotic physics, something. They were all PhDs. Like, every one of them worked on, like, beam weapons, stuff like that. So it's not really the world of science fiction. It is, like, that science was founded by actual scientists. It wasn't like mediums that started doing it first and then the scientists came after. You know? And to think of that is phenomenal. And like you were saying, the idea of marrying these concepts together, like what Raymond Moody has done in his work, Life After Life, and to understand that the two do not have to compete.
No.
You know, your faith in something, your belief in prayer and the power of prayer does not have to compete with your belief in science. As a matter,
no, they're the same. They're
one
the same
and the same.
Yeah, that's what quantum physics. The yes. old physics was the old Newtonian Cartesian says, show me and I'll believe. But it doesn't work like that. Quantum nope. physics comes along, and even saints and avatars down the millennium, they said, no, no, no. Believe and I'll show you.
Yeah, believe and you will be shown.
Yeah. And so, but that was way before scientists started looking at it, is my point. And so scientists now, at least from my experience, they're just confirming there used to be this notion, New Age. It's not New Age. This is stuff that people were knowing thousands of years ago that we're just catching up with.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus says, it's done unto you as you believe. Okay. Now, yes, that doesn't mean everything you want is going to happen, but it does mean you're more powerful than you think you are. And if you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand.
Well, there's and people tend to forget also that there is a big difference between wanting and believing. Wanting more money in your life is one thing. That's great. You know, if you are supposed to go through a trial or tribulation in your life, likelihood is you ain't going to get the money you're praying for. Does that mean that your answer wasn't there for your prayer? No, absolutely not. The lesson was still learned. The lesson was still given. The question is, were you willing enough to understand it? Now, believing that you are deserving of something in this world is something totally different. And until you actively believe, soul of souls, atom for atom, that this is, you know, that's where the power of healing comes from. That's where literally we hold ourselves down with debt, regret, everything, because for some reason, even in my session with Vinnie Tolman, he was like, you have held on. It's beautiful, your relationship. He was like, I can feel your grandfather here with us right now, and it's beautiful with your relationship with him. But for some reason, Chris, somebody somewhere along the way sold you a bill of goods that said you had to suffer with the pain of his loss for the rest of your life. And you don't. Somebody sold you on that what makes you complete is remembering the suffering of his loss. And that's not it.
Right.
And that's when I broke down, because my God, man, how many times have I told that to people? And I couldn't do it myself. It took somebody else to tell me. And it's been a world of vision since.
Yes.
Thank you, Vincent Tolman, for relieving me of that debt that I thought that I had to hold on to for no good reason, man. Well, since seventh grade, brother.
And that's what religion does to us.
It can. It absolutely can.
Yes.
Doesn't for everybody, but for a lot of people it does. It does.
Because we are told that we're not worthy.
Yeah.
Not worthy of the love of God. Someone had to get beat up in the Middle East and spit on and now all of a sudden we're free.
Yeah.
And that debt can never be paid. So you're always going to fall short. You know? And that's just not a healthy way to be.
No, no.
At least not for me. And so that's thus your transformation. So he comes along and tells you that. So Buddha comes along, Jesus, whoever, anybody comes along and says, I'm in the West, so I'll use this metaphor. You can put down that cross now. You don't need to carry that anymore. All you're doing is getting splinters in your back. You can put that bag down. Well, then that's life changing. That's life changing in any language or religion you want to call it. And we're fortunate when we're open enough to see that people do that. And we do that for each other. And we can do it for ourselves, as we've all done. And therein lies the key. I give you an example. I think maybe I've mentioned this with you before. You know, after my second marriage fell apart, I had to take some time to heal and be alone. I'm the type of person that I like to have a partner. But once I started believing, really believing that I deserve the good in my life, whether that's in relationship,
yeah,
whether that's in prosperity or what have you, you know, otherwise I would sabotage it. And once I've opened up to that, I can't tell you. The thing, you know, my needs are provided for. I have a wonderful partner now. But I have to remind myself, too, that yes, our paths meet. There are a lot of variables involved, but I deserve a good partner. And if you want to have a good partner, you want to be able to be a good partner. But this is what I'm saying, that we can create the reality once we have the tools and know that we're deserving of it. And a lot of us don't do it because we've been told that we don't.
Yeah.
And it's hard to let go of that. You know, sometimes you take two steps and three steps back. But the point being, as we get back, I want, you know, to what we were talking about. Mm. These are transformational things. Sometimes it takes an OBE. Sometimes it takes an NDE. Sometimes it can take watching a sunset. Sometimes it could take making love. But there's an experience that is transcendent. It always doesn't have to be something tragic. And you lose that sense of separateness. You start to really know on a deep level that I am one with all that is. And when you come back for that, because you can't sustain it, not while you're in this body, you have transformed. You have changed. People working on Wall Street come back from one of these experiences and then they give it all up and become a Reiki master. Or they become a massage therapist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they see things differently. Like Wayne Dyer says, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at begin to change. And that's what that powerful transformation. And it says, if this can happen in my life, then you can do it in yours.
Oh,
and that's the message. That's the message.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there does definitely take that moment of surrender. You know, that I guess it's really that deep breath moment where you get to go, wow, wait a minute. I don't actively have to push all the time. You know, what was it for you, Reverend, that was your, I guess, moment of epiphany, that where you realized that you were just part of the system, that you're talking about?
Yeah. When I left my Baptist upbringing and I started reading metaphysics and, you know, existentialist literature, that kind of thing. So I was already moving in that direction. And of course, I was going to a metaphysical church, Science of Mind, they called it back then. Mm. New Thought, you know, Unity. But when I had that first experience with that gray human being, that was the game changer. I didn't have a near-death experience, but I had an ego death. And that changed because I realized that all the stuff I was taught about religion was not so much wrong, but it didn't even come close. It didn't even come close.
Yeah.
And so that it was all about love, but that was gradual. But that was the game changer for me, December 28, 1989, when that gray being came into my room and looked at me and scared the you-know-what out of me. Mm. And that's the thing that's so wondrous, because it's the mysterium tremendum, okay? It's the very thing that awes you is the thing that scares you.
Yeah.
It's whether you want to call that God or whatever, it's the mysterium. It's mysterious. It's powerful. It's all encompassing. I'm afraid of it, but at the same time, like a moth going to a flame, I need to be with it.
Yeah.
And when I had those years, when I had a few years in between where I wasn't having any physical visitations, I longed for them.
Mm.
I longed for, where are you? Did I do something wrong? Am I not doing my mission, man? It's okay.
Yeah.
I won't be so scared next time or whatever. I'm making deals with you. I'm not. And they came when they were ready to come.
Yeah.
But I realized that. And I'm not saying they're God. I'm not saying that. But it was that transcendent experience.
Yeah.
And that scared me, because, my God, look at you. You're a reptilian. My God, look at you. You're a gray. My God, look at you. You're a grasshopper. But at the same time, how I felt afterwards, how I interacted. Boy, I like this feeling. Yeah. I like me. I like.
Yeah.
I like you. I like. And so I wanted to be back in it. And at the same time, I was like, I don't sleep at night. I can't turn the lights out. I'm afraid. I'm a wreck. But I wanted it.
Yeah.
I said, it's worth going through this.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, Reverend, because earlier we were talking about the gifts of the spirit. And one of the original gifts of the spirit that was changed by the church, actually, was fear of the Lord. It became wonder and awe.
Yeah.
In Vatican II, from fear of the Lord. And a lot of people don't. There is that.
It's a big deal. That's a big deal.
It's a beautiful thing, too, because there is that wondrous moment where, you've climbed to the top of a mountain and then you go, oh, crap, I'm on top of a mountain. And there's a feeling of fear because you can see everything underneath you. But at the same time, there's an utter sense of wonder and beauty going on at the same time, that the only way you're going to get it is to go up to the edge at the top of that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And the words, they get in the way.
Yeah.
I love this. I just read this saying the other day, and it's true, because everything you ever want is on the other side of that fear.
Yeah. Yep.
And even if we bring it down from the lofty rhetoric that we're using now, we live in a time, okay, Biden's telling Putin, don't go there with the chemicals and the atom thing. Don't do it. He's saying, well, you don't tell me what to do. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Even the climate is screwed up. And now we got the midterms coming. And we have to learn, without the loftiness of it, we have to learn to manage our fear. Yeah. Because otherwise you can't live life. Because the news is going to tell you all of it. I don't care what it's WMB, whatever it is, the liberal one or Fox or whatever. You've got to be able to go through that, turn it off or whatever, and manage your fear. Einstein was right when he said the most important question we can ever ask ourselves is the universe a friendly place? Because the way you answer that question will affect the way you live your life.
Absolute truth.
So we've got to learn, and I'm not saying it's easy.
Mm-mm.
And sometimes, again, you take two steps up and three steps back. But if you don't, man, because it's not, courage is not the absence of fear, right? It's moving on despite the fear.
That's right.
You got to do it.
Yeah. And it really is. It's learning to recognize that as well. And learning to recognize that, like I told so many kids years ago, the little kite string behind your belly button, like it's the same feeling before you get onto a roller coaster. Like you're three steps away from getting into the car now, and you can kind of feel your tummy like already, ooh, Like, I'm excited and I'm scared at the same time, you know?
Yeah. To be able to even say it, and but you got to feel safe to say it.
Yeah.
But yeah, because the thing is that, if I could control you, man, I just play on your fears, and you, I can lead you anywhere I want.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be that predictable.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is a point of, once you know your fears, you know yourself, and you can face them and conquer them. And I want to thank you for taking the time today, despite the technical issues that started off. My fingertips are tingling. So quite obviously, I needed this conversation today. And I want to thank you for that.
I love it. And I got, I've been a guest on this show a few times and hope to continue to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I told you today, I got to run and do my memorial service. But and I thank you for respecting the time. And I'm glad we got the chance to do it. And let me know when this is going to air. And
tomorrow night.
Okay. Because I want to.
I'll share the promo link with you in a few hours.
Yeah, I want to get people to tune in. And, because I will say this to you, brother, before I go. You are one of very few, and I mean that, the most intelligent, heartfelt, and probably that's that seminary stuff, because once you're that, you're always that. That's where you, and you blend the scientific and the spiritual, because that there's no separation.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how easy it is for me to say, when you call and say, I'll do your show. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it. It's always time well spent. It's always intelligent. It's cogent. It's, it's always on time. And you always throw a few doses of love in there and you stir it up.
Thank you.
And so it's a privilege to be here. And so I thank you, brother.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I try to see my show as a means by which it's my pebble I get to throw in the pond every week and make a ripple with.
And you're making many ripples.
I'm trying. So you take care. My prayers will be with you today as you were out at the memorial service for your dear lost member of your flock.
Her mom had Alzheimer's and she just left. But let's talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you very, very soon.
Please, brother, don't forget. Yeah. I'll be away this weekend and I'm speaking at the conference in Michigan.
Yeah.
I'll be back Sunday.
Well,
it's in Michigan. Kathleen Martin dropped out. She couldn't make it. But there's some other talented speakers there. It's in late Houghton, Michigan, and I'm going to leave there and go there Thursday, and I'll be back Sunday night, and to be continued.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Take care. We're going to go ahead and close things out. While you're online, everybody, checking out everything from our amazing guest, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is the website where you can get all the episodes. That is where you can follow us on social media. That's where you can go to the Knowledge Vault, get all of our declassified government programs, everything else. That is also where you can go to share your story at curiousrealm.com/story. And we'll use your account in an episode and talk about it anonymously if you like, or use your name. But until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, curiousrealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.